What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Katie Halper Show, and I'm your host, Katie Halper. If you like the show, please leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow, where for just $1 a month, you can make this show happen. And for $5 a month, you get great bonus content, including extended interviews, bonus episodes, sneak peeks at my upcoming documentary feature film, and more. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. We are so excited to be with you here tonight, and we have really an amazing show. I know I say that all the time, and I'm telling you the truth again when I say it now. It's going to be great. We have a guest joining us from Europe. But he's from Gaza, and we are so excited and honored to be talking to him. And then during the second half of the show, we have the great Abby Martin, the U.S.-based journalist. And before I bring on Abu Bekar, who is our first guest, and thank you guys for your patience. We had a little tech issue. But before we bring on our first guest, I do want to just remind people to please like the stream, give it a thumbs up. That's a way to help the algorithm. Also, please do subscribe if you haven't already subscribed. And to do that, you hit subscribe and you hit the bell so you don't miss any streams. Also, if you can become Patreon supporters, that's great. That's amazing at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. And you get bonus episodes and extended interviews. And it's a great time. So I highly recommend that. And we really literally could not do the show without your Patreon support. We just wouldn't be able to do it. So thank you to everyone who already has subscribed. I encourage people who haven't already subscribed to do so. And also thank you to everyone who subscribed to the channel. Okay, so we are about to bring on Abu Bekar, and I'm so excited to bring him on. Abu Bekar Abed is a 22-year-old Palestinian journalist from Deir al-Bala, Gaza. He evacuated Gaza, suffering from malnutrition and under threat for his reporting on Israel's genocide. He describes himself as an accidental war correspondent and hoped to become a sports journalist and commentator before the start of the genocide, which forced him to become a war correspondent. So he is now based in Ireland, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. And I know you are not on the East Coast. You're not in the States right now. So I appreciate how late it is where you are. So I really am so grateful for your coming on and also coming on this late.
Oh, thank you. That was mine.
So I wanted to ask you, before we got into the genocide and the targeted murder of journalists, people have an image of Gaza as a place of desolation and occupation and blockade. But you're someone who obviously you're from Gaza, you've lived there. And what can you tell us about what Gaza was like before October 7th? Now, obviously, there was a blockade and I'm not dismissing how hard life was there. But for people who think that Gaza is just this site of death and destruction, what do you want people to know?
Well, unfortunately, Katie, the situation in Gaza before even October the 7th was terrible because Israel imposed a full-spectrum siege on Gaza since 2006, and that caused numerous deaths in Gaza, denying the permits of many injured and wounded people and with chronic diseases, people with chronic diseases, with cancer, and many different viral infections. And this blockade has caused many civil deaths among people because Israel simply doesn't want people to get out and receive treatment, and they were denying their permits all the time. At the same time, people think that Gaza was a haven or was something that we will always love, but that's untrue, because before October the 7th, people were not finding jobs, and the people who were working at that time were very, very few. The unemployment rates were very exceptionally high. Even university students could not afford their tuition fees. And the number of people who were homeless in Gaza for the genocide was extraordinary. Very, very extraordinary. Even the starvation, if you look at the reports before October the 7th, some of the reports that went out of Gaza can tell you how the situation is. UNRWA and the UN in the previous times, because of the blockade Israel has imposed on Gaza, they have warned against the depletion of food in many of its stocks. That was some kind of a report that they were verified reports from Gaza before October the 7th. And this can be added to the number of wars Gaza left before October the 7th. We're talking about 2009 war, 2012, 2014, 2021. Apart from the different and the various escalations Gaza has lived through. So the point here is that unfortunately, Israel has always rendered Gaza as hellish. And because people in Gaza are now listening to some people in Gaza saying that Gaza was beautiful before October 7th, that we miss Gaza, which is very legitimate to say, because when you, Katie, have an orange and you're looking for two oranges, but then you lose this orange, you would say, no, I just need one to want this orange back. And this is what has happened to Gaza. They had an eye to see where, like they had one bleeding eye to see with. Now they don't have any eyes. The situation has gone far, far worse than they could imagine. So they say that we just need one bleeding eye. It's enough. We just want to see. So this is how I put it, to be honest with you, because everyone in Gaza was suffering, has always been suffering. We never saw the worst. And what I can tell you from my own experience being in the West, that when I left Gaza, and I've been here in the West for 4 months, of course I miss Gaza and I miss everything, but I realized, I came to the conclusion that I never lived in Gaza, and my life started when I left Gaza, because there was literally no life in Gaza. It was just death, destruction, wars, and blockade. And the number of people who are living life in Gaza, literally, there are a few hundreds of people, and there was no moment. The problem is that in Gaza before October the 7th, there was always a sentiment, a public sentiment. People that we'd be talking about all the time, tomorrow Israel might buy us. Tomorrow, there might be an escalation. Tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. And that's what was happening in Gaza, that you wouldn't have respite in Gaza. You know that Israel may bomb you at any point. And that's what has been happening over the past years. So the fact that people are taken for granted at the moment that Gaza was heaven before October the 7th, people had everything. No, there are many things that it was asking for myself that I couldn't find in Gaza and wanted to bring it from outside. They were not allowed into Gaza. The other thing is that I was myself granted many scholarships outside, but it was denied because of the occupation, Israeli occupation in 2021. My neighbor, he died from cancer because he was denied the permit to get treatment outside. Another story about this, another man I know in Gaza, who had cancer, who needed an urgent surgery, and they talked to the Israeli military about it. They denied him an exit outside the strip, and he died. And hundreds and even thousands of cases are like this. People never, they say in this, in the outside world, because they never cared about Gaza, but they started caring and batting an eyelid when the genocide started.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of unbearable. I mean, it's inconceivable that it's been like genocide on top of slow genocide in some ways.
Exactly. That's what I say. It's many genocide, but this is the genocide. This is like the big genocide. But the past ones were many genocides, like in the past four wars and the different escalations, nearly 5,000 people have been killed for more than 1,500 have been wounded. I know people, Katie, who hasn't before this genocide started, literally, I know a lot of people who haven't even rebuilt their destroyed houses because of the wars that Israel has launched in Gaza. So they can tell you where we were for October the 7th. And I remember like seeing the videos and talking to people for October the 7th. There's a viral video about that for a man who didn't find any kind of life, any meaning of life into Gaza. And he was shouting all the time, like, lift the blockade, let us live as any other people. And to tell you this, even when I was with my friend who was murdered by Israel on December the 11th, 2023, literally, I'm not shy of saying this, but A and I were watching videos of people, how they live outside before the genocide in August 2023 and in September 2023. We were spending hours together just looking at the vlogs of people living outside, looking at how people live on social media, how they go to restaurants, how life in Europe is. And he always dreamt of traveling outside just to have a sense of people's life, but he was killed. So if there were a life before October the 7th, why people would have been suffering in the first place? Why a lot of people didn't have work? Why a lot of people died because of Israel's restrictions on Gaza? Why a lot of university students, most of them didn't have the ability to afford, or didn't have the affordability for tuition fees? Like, Where are we? Where was the luxury in Gaza? There was never life. There was nothing. And anyone who get out of Gaza during the genocide or before the genocide can testify to that.
I wanted to ask you about what you experienced before you left Gaza. You were suffering from malnutrition, also threats. Can you talk about that? And especially, I think, you know, I've had people on, I've had doctors on, and I've struggled with asking them about the starvation because I almost didn't want to upset people. But I think it's important for people to understand what it feels like to be suffering from this.
Well, that's a good question. Well, I mean, starvation is not just coming across the definition of starvation, because living it is not like coming across the world itself. Starvation means that you literally have to ration yourself to one meal a day. And the one meal people eat in Gaza is not the meal that people in the outside world have. It's a quarter of a single meal for anyone outside Gaza. You know what I mean? So what I mean is that people have a quarter of a normal meal for any human being. And that's what they have a single day, which means that, and what they have is lentils, a can of food, a single piece of bread, and that's it. The experience that I had in Gaza was, it came to a level, to reach to a level where I was opening the fridge and there was nothing inside. And I was just like, all the time telling myself in Gaza, I wish I could be in a different country to get some lettuce, to get some food, to have anything. That's something we never knew. Even here in Ireland or wherever I am in Europe, when I get a tomato, when I get a mango and people see me, I see, like, this is for me the most luxury I can have. I never waste anything. People waste a lot here. They do waste a lot of things. For me, the leftovers people left in the waste baskets and bins and the skips, that for me was once my dream. And it is now the dream of every Palestinian in Gaza. Starvation means to see your neighbor's children drawing food in the sand, to see your neighbor's son, baby, crying every night and their mother is unable to provide them with food. Starvation means when a child tells you, and that's something all of them are experiences that I know and that I've come across. One time, my nephew came to me and asked about a banana. Why isn't there a banana in the markets? Okay. And then he said, we told him, like, because of the starvation and because of the blockade. And he said, if I become a monkey, Daft will give me a banana. Like, will I get a banana like monkeys? Look at how children are thinking at the moment. And the same with the other children. I met a child who was literally selling his own books in Gaza just for to help his family with the kind of living or whatever. And one time when I met him and I wanted him to vent his pain, he was shouting at me, "We need to eat, we need to eat. That's all we want. We don't have anything. We don't have anything to do with this. Like, we are children. We want to live like any other children around the world." Now, for children outside, what I'm seeing here in Europe is that children, they do have the most luxuries across the globe, but they still complain. That can tell you where the level of education from parents towards the children is. And at the same time, I'm enraged because parents are not educating their children to be content and to be thankful. And that's what I found here in the West. I remember a couple of children whom I met and who befriended like each other during the genocide, because both of their parents had been killed and they wanted to befriend each other because they wanted to have a makeshift stall to buy wood for fire, to sell wood for fire and to help their families in any way, okay? But then they spent labor for children had become very popular in Gaza. And it was even popular before the genocide. You would see children, and that can tell you what life was like before October the 7th. Many children were working every single day for many hours under the scorching sun or under the winter rains just to help their families. So many of them before the genocide and during the genocide, the number has become staggering. So why are these children working? Because they've lost their parents. We're talking about tens of thousands of orphan children that nobody cares about. We're talking about children who have been displaced, have been separated from their families. They too know nothing about their families. So now they're working for many hours under the scorching sun because it's summer right now in Gaza to get literally some dollars, but it's not dollars, it's shekels, but some shekels would be a few dollars. And in Gaza, the prices are tenfold at the moment. One onion in Gaza, when I was in Gaza even, one onion was costing nearly $20. How can people afford? How can these children afford? So they told me one time, I remember this very well from them, they told me, like, we wish just to sleep one day on a full stomach. Imagine what these children are talking about. We wish that we could have one day at school. This is how children are thinking. And the war language, this is another point about children. All they talk about is war, is genocide, and is everything. And every time they see a plane, like, honestly, Katie, whenever I hear an airplane, civilian airplane here in the West, I get very terrified. And I'm an adult. Practically, imagine for the children. I remember this child whom I was talking to you about, who was selling his own books, and he was telling me every day he gets up terrified every night because he always dreams that the Israeli military would come and execute his entire family and him. 10-year-old child, I haven't talked to you about the injuries among the children. I have talked to you about the level of how they are. Most of the children in Gaza, they have only one piece of clothing. I have seen that since the genocide and until now. And they have only one piece of clothing that they haven't changed yet. They're barefoot, they don't have sandals, they don't have boots. So the level of suffering has become truly unbearable, beyond words. And that people are ignoring it. People are thinking, are discussing other things. And that's why those children, those people, men, women, everyone is suffering at the moment because of the word silence, because of the complicity.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about this because I don't know if you want to give this guy any attention. But, you know, I've heard you speak about the atrocious murder of journalists. And of course, most recently, Anas al-Sharif. And I do know that someone who was very active in smearing him and I would say has blood on his hands has been targeting you. Do you want to talk about that, or should we ignore him to not even give this guy?
I just wanted to say that this guy desperately wanted to assassinate me in Gaza along with some other Israelis. And his threats were very serious, unfortunately. And he's been unfortunately successful in targeting and assassinating other journalists, including Anas Sharif. And there's no accountability. The CBJ is useless. The other organizations, media organizations, are useless. Almost all Western media outlets are complicit in those murders. I'm aware of the fact that they are smearing me at the moment because of the conference in the United States. But I don't want to elaborate on this, unfortunately. But, I mean, all that I want to say is that I would, because people are listening to me, I would advise anyone, if they see a smear campaign, don't share it, ignore it.
Okay.
That's Zionist, yeah, Zionists need tension. And right. When it gets in tension and it grows, it becomes serious and it turns into a targeted assassination. So please ignore any kind of threats you see against Western journalists, Gazan journalists on the ground, because simply you're not going to help them. You are just going to publicize it, and no one can stop Israel from assassinating those Palestinian journalists. But in fact, you're helping these threats become serious and turn into a targeted assassination. So we should avoid them.
Okay, good to know. Yeah. And then I just hope lawyers take them up one day.
Well, after the genocide ends, of course, after the genocide ends, that could be feasible.
Yeah. There's a lot of breaking news. I mean, there's increased attacks today. There's a new offensive on Gaza. There's also a new diplomatic breaking news about Hamas accepting a ceasefire, and surprise, surprise, Israel not. What do you think people need to know about what's happening in Gaza right now as we speak?
Well, I think they've seen everything, Casey. They've seen everything, they've been protesting, they've been doing okay, some things, but honestly, they haven't been, like, I've been in the West for quite a long time at the moment, and I can tell you, Katie, most people are not sincere, unfortunately. That's what that's hurt me. Like, you cannot, like, I saw a lot of people protesting for Palestine, but after that, they go for a restaurant. What on earth are you doing? Like, if you are really, like, feel our pain, like, if you feel our pain, you will not have, I know a lot of people at the same time, a few people, not a lot of people really, that they wouldn't go to restaurants because they can't. They feel shame. They feel shame. They feel guilt. They feel pain about what's happening. And a few people do this, but most people who are protesting and are doing something for Palestine, supposedly, they're doing it just to absolve the guilt that they feel and that we did something. But Palestine is not a pen that you're holding or that you hang up on your T-shirt. Or Palestine is not a post on social media. Palestine is not a protest that you participate in. Palestine and Gaza are way bigger than that. If you are honest with your solidarity with Gaza, you should keep going on. You shouldn't really go to restaurants. I'm not saying people shouldn't really enjoy themselves, but how can you, as a human being, enjoy yourself while your own money is being used by your government to go and sent to Israel to kill children? So people here have a collective responsibility to stop their government's complicity, because their taxes go to the governments, and these taxes, part of them goes to Israel, and Israel uses that to kill us and to bomb us. So you are essentially complicit if you can't stop your government's complicity. But don't tell me that you have been doing, I mean, something for Palestine when you are truly, truly doing something every 2 weeks, like in these 3 weeks, many people would have been killed in those 3 weeks. So Palestine is not just about something that you do and then, okay, I'm going to for a protest in my free time. That's it. We're going to do a protest every 2 weeks and that's it. That's how people think about it. The governments are complicit. They ignore the governments. They're protesting. Their governments are not going to capitulate to the pressure or bucket under pressure if it is not constant. And it's not constant. You can't tell me, okay, we have, for example, protests in the United States, 500,000 people, here in London the same, in Australia the same. But it is 2 weeks, every 2 weeks. It doesn't make any sense. But if it is every day the same, then there will be a change. But people, I have no idea. I have no words to tell you, but I'm very disappointed. This is not about this, because believe me, if you believe, if you feel our pain, you would have done a lot. And that's what a few people do. The same with Palestine Action. They've been arrested. They've been put in the most horrible times just to support Palestine. And they've been arrested. They've been doing everything. I know people have sold everything they have just for Gaza, just to feel that they've done something. And they're not sure if they've done something. But most of people think Palestine, I think their support is performative.
So what would you like to see? More relentless protests, people risking more? What is it that you...
Yeah, because they're not risking more for Palestine, essentially. They're not risking more for Palestine. They're risking for themselves because they're paying taxes for their government, and the governments are using these taxes to send for Israel, to send for to Israel, and then Israel uses that to kill us, as I just mentioned to you. People, if they have a conscience, how can you sleep while your money goes to your government, and your government sends that to Israel, and Israel then uses it to annihilate an entire society and mass murder children and mass starve them? How can you sleep? How can you even go ahead with your lives? That for me doesn't make any sense. That for me, I can't believe it, honestly, because if I were them, believe me 100%, I'm someone from Gaza and I know what Gaza is like. But if the people of Gaza, if we switched positions and you were us and we were you, well, we didn't have rested until we have intervened. In many previous times, on many previous occasions, Gaza, Katie, under the occupation, has sent millions of dollars to marginalized countries. And everybody can check that, of course, and you can see that Gaza, in the most horrible times, difficult times in the occupation, they've been helping marginalized countries. So as you, many times Gaza would have sacrificed a lot just for the freedom of people. So why are you not sacrificing enough? Why are you not taking the risk enough? Yeah, there should be relentless protesting. Yes, I believe so. There should be mass civil disobedience. And this is not for me, disobedience. People should go on a global strike. People should go on a hunger strike. Because if you think, when you believe, when you realize that my money goes to kill children and starve them while you have children, while you have a family, while you have a home, and you don't act enough, then I mean, what kind of a humanity do you have? What kind of moral compass do you have? That's what I'm asking myself. So, yeah, like, why are you not doing more? Right. There's no justification of people's silence and very, very much lacked support.
Yeah, actually, I went to a protest the other day, a couple weeks ago, and it was an If Not Now protest. And one of the speakers, Simone Zimmerman, was saying, like, whatever you're doing now, do that, but risk more. And if you're, you know, someone, especially people who are documented in this, in the United States, we really need to be out on the streets, because the people who are not documented or people who are here on green cards are really vulnerable to deportation, to arrest. So I think that it is a time to exercise your privilege.
Yeah, it's like this. And that for me is very disheartening. I really thought, I have to be honest with you, I was delusional to believe, when I was seeing the protests in the West, I was delusional to believe that they were relentless. I was delusional to believe that most people cared enough. No, that's not the truth. People are simply going ahead with their lives. They're going to restaurants as if nothing is happening, as if their money's not going, is not being used to help Israel kill us. That's what they're doing at the moment.
I also wanted to ask you, Well, we have actually our other guests here. So should I bring in our other guests? Because I know that you were excited to be on screen together. Definitely. Okay, great. So we're going to bring on another really brave journalist who's done a lot of important work on Palestine. And I highly recommend her wonderful documentary, Gaza Fights for Freedom. So let's bring on to the stage, the virtual stage, Abby Martin of the Empire Files.
Hey.
Hi, Abby. How are you?
Can you hear me okay? I didn't do a mic check. Yep.
Hello.
Hi, Abu Bakr.
How are you?
I'm doing good. It's really great to hear from you, and it's so great seeing you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You're wearing green. That could be an indication that we can't talk about.
That's true. Yeah, don't get us shut down on YouTube. Yeah, they're gonna pull us off. Yeah. Well, I just want to give both of you the chance to talk about journalism. Obviously, you've become a journalist, a war correspondent, Bakr, not out of desire, but out of necessity and circumstance, because your passion is sports. Abby, you're someone who has worked with a lot of journalists, especially making Gaza Fights for Freedom, because you, of course, were not allowed into Gaza. So what are you hearing from your people in Gaza, and what do you want people to know about them?
Her
colleagues and friends in Gaza who she worked with on Gaza Fights for Freedom.
Well, the videographer, Maz Maza, who's still there, his wife just gave birth a week ago. And I was really nervous about that for obvious reasons. You know, for me, just the worry of giving birth potentially alone during COVID in an N95 mask was just like the most horrifying prospect. And then having a friend whose wife was due to give birth, and doctors said there was a 90% chance of C-section. And as we know, they were rationing anesthetics. So it was it's just been so crazy day to day to check in with Maz, who's now caretaking 30 other people, because all five of his brothers have been murdered over the course of this genocide, and his father. So he's the last one left of his family. He's now caretaking all of his brothers' wives and all of their children.
I also want to ask you about something, because Abu Bakr, I know that you were interested in discussing this because it's so vile. But we have an update from Trump. Of course, sadly, with Trump, you get updates from his like Truth Social posts. But Brad, let me know if that's ready, because I want to read what he said. So Trump wrote on Truth Social. On August 18th, so today, we will only see the return of the remaining hostages when Hamas is confronted and destroyed. The sooner this takes place, the better the chances of success will be. Remember, I was the one who negotiated and got hundreds of hostages freed and released into Israel and America. I was the one who ended six wars in just 6 months. I was the one who obliterated Iran's nuclear facilities. Play to win or don't play at all. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President DJT. I mean, it's just such a bizarre announcement. First of all, was it up on the screen? It was. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just so bizarre. But what are your thoughts on this, Abu Bakr, and then Abby?
But just before commenting on this, because Abby mentioned just a tragic story, and Abby, unfortunately, it's not about this person. It's also about hundreds of, but you know, my sister had to give birth during the genocide in June 2024. And they were the most horrible, awful, atrocious circumstances than we could imagine. She had to stay under the bombs and under the quadcopters near the sea with the gunfire coming from the military vessels across the Rubella Sea. And we were all terrified, and we had to stay while the bombs were falling nearby. That was my sister. And I know many others, especially during this time of starvation, many mothers that I'm aware of at the moment and some I'm talking to, I'm not a woman to say this, but their breasts are dry. Literally, that I have to say this, but I'm not a woman to say this. Like, I'm shy to even say it. And a lot of women talk to me, they say, most women in Gaza now, Abby, have children. And of course, they need diapers, right? But most women use plastic bags instead. Most women use water with a flavor instead of milk. And I'm literally every single day receiving pleas from mothers in Gaza to help. And look, I'm wandering around Europe, Abby. I'm sorry, but look at the number of shops who have diapers, who have milk, formula. There's not a single man in the whole world to get baby formula into Gaza for these women. We all know that Hamas doesn't recruit women. Not a single political woman, but winged in Gaza, does so. But what have these women done to starve them and to plunge them into this horrific zone of suffering? I can't imagine it. I mean, you're a mother, Abby. You're a mother, probably, Katie, I don't know. But how on earth mothers are sleeping while this is happening and your taxes, as I just mentioned to Katie, are used to let or to enforce or force suffering upon these mothers. Look at the number of diapers bags here. Look at the number of baby formula, the cans of milk. Look at the care these babies receive every single day. What as Abu Bakr should tell, just tell me because your mothers, I can't understand it. What as Abu Bakr should I tell, okay, those mothers to do when they say, we just need a diaper?
I mean, it really is like looking at an alien planet where we have all the resources possible around us. And all it will take is just breaking through and getting it to the people who are in dire need. And this is man-made. This is artificial. And you can't do anything to help. The helplessness. Abu Bakr, I don't know. I don't know what you tell these mothers. I don't know what tell people in Gaza.
Abby, what is the reason of helplessness? There's no reason. I can't see it. What is the people of helplessness? It is because people here in the West, I've been in the West for 4 months and I can judge now. People are so vile. That's the word. People are so vile, Abby. All of them are buckling under the pressure. Nobody is ready to sacrifice anything. People are living in an individualistic, materialistic, and capitalistic community that has literally crushed their brains. That's it. It's not a matter of hopelessness. People can help. People can do mass civil disobedience, can go on a global strike and pressure their governments. And I'm going to say this. If they vandalize the public buildings, that could be a solution as well, if they have. Because your money is being used to kill us and starve babies. You could have changed that a long time ago. But people are not ready to take such a sacrifice. Palestine is not a protest every 2 weeks, Abby. Palestine is not a postaway. No, it's not this. People are not ready to take such a sacrifice. What are you doing? Tell me. And tell me what you have sacrificed. You're not sacrificing for Palestine, but you're preventing yourself from being complicit. And you are preventing your government from acting under your name and from co-committing the Holocaust of our time. So tell me. What's the point of helplessness? You have everything. You literally have everything. Who's stronger, the government or the people? Of course, the people. But no. America is the devil. America is controlling everything. Everybody's afraid of America for absolutely nothing. Look at Gaza. A group of fighters, 40,000 fighters, have been reporting on that, Abby. They've been fought against by the most brutal powers in the world, backed by the Western world, backed by the United States, and they are using, Israel is using the most developed and modern weaponry in the world. What have they achieved militarily? Imagine if the resistance in Gaza had a quarter of the support Israel has received over the past 2 years. Israel would have been crushed to pieces. But no one, look at people, look at those Western journalists, with all due respect, how many are ready to identify or are ready to recognize Palestine's right to self-defense or armed resistance? I know both of you do. I'm not talking about this, but look at the number of Western journalists. Okay, we need Palestinians to act as gentle, polite victims. That's what people need from us. And that's how it is. They want us to be dehumanized. They want to dehumanize us. They want us to be humiliated. And that's the matter. Like, I'm very enraged here. I'm very, very enraged. Believe me, Abby, I'm so sorry to say this, but most people literally don't care. That's it.
Well, I wanted to actually give you both the chance to react to, speaking of perhaps performative outrage and failure of Western journalists. You know, Clarissa Ward released a video that people have been talking about. And so I want to give you the chance, Abu Bakr especially, to react to it. So let's take a look. And she, of course, is a CNN journalist.
I woke up this morning to the horrific news that Anas al-Sharif, the Al Jazeera journalist, and three of his colleagues were killed in a targeted Israeli strike inside Gaza. This brings the total number of journalists killed in Gaza since October 7th to 176, which is, frankly, a mind-boggling statistic. And I just wanted to say, and I realize that it helps nobody, but I think I speak for a lot of Western journalists when I say that so many of us feel angry and outraged and powerless and ashamed. We are confronted with a stream of accusations from the IDF that seek to dehumanize our Palestinian colleagues, that seek to justify their killings, and the nature of the carefully calibrated language that we are using in our stories, I understand to many, just feels so detached and so not proportional to the agony and outrage of the moment. And behind the scenes, many of us continue to push and press and sign letters and write petitions and do meetings, and none of it seems to make a damn bit of difference. So just a reminder that journalism is not a crime, and that the targeting of journalists is a war crime.
Okay, of course, journalism is not a crime. Targeting journalists is a war crime. But what are your thoughts on this?
She's justified these war crimes early and the genocide. So what the hell is she talking about? I can't understand it. Like, she pretended, she did an active play in occupied Palestine, claiming that Hamas was firing rockets at there. And she talked about the hoaxes Israel made up during the first days of the genocide. And that was enough for Israel to kill many Palestinians. And also, I just want to ask, like, why is she talking up? Why is she speaking up right now? Why is she, didn't she defend Anas al-Sharif when the claims and the threats against him were made? Why did she have to wait until he got killed to speak up? It's very performative, very, very performative. And again, as a Palestinian, I will never care about her voice, because simply, do you want me to forgive someone who has justified killing many of my people? Of course not. All of this is performative. All of this. Well, if she's honest, by the way, she would have quitted CNN a long time ago, right? Why is she staying in CNN? A lot of other journalists, Singita, she's in the UK. She has resigned from LBC. She was fired because she challenged an Israeli official. Well, someone with a conscience, with a piercing moral clarity, with a sense of moral clarity, would have quitted a place that has been justifying the Holocaust of our time and giving consent for the Israelis to go ahead with its genocidal campaign. But what is that? It's just a performative scene. She wants to climb up the mountains upon the pain of our people. Yeah. And everyone seems now, many seem now to have been against it, which is untrue. They want to wash their hands of their complicity. And for us, this is unforgivable, unforgettable, and we have to see them held accountable. And that's something I'm really working on at the moment. Yeah.
I just want to say Clarissa Ward is not powerless. She's one of the most famous journalists in the world. Palestinians do not need world-famous journalists to work behind the scenes. They need them to put their jobs on the line and resign in protest. That's what they need. So, you know, when I was at RT and Russia annexed Crimea, I put my job on the line and I told my boss, if I can't say this on air, I'm walking. Where is that integrity? Where's the dignity? Where's the self-respect to come out almost 2 years into a genocide after the performative nonsense she did on the ground in Palestine, to come out almost 2 years later and say targeting journalists is a war crime? Look, all the carefully calibrated language that you see is so detached. Yeah, no shit. It's detached. Why aren't you challenging that? Why aren't you pushing out in front? Imagine the respect that she would get if she resigned in protest, because anything less than that is enabling the propaganda and laying the groundwork for genocide, Clarissa. You are complicit unless you quit. All of the work behind the scenes is meaningless. No one cares about that. What we care about is what you say up front and in the public eye. So what is it? What's it going to be? I mean, all of this is just a disgrace.
It is. I agree.
And also, it's also rich to see people who were okay with genocide until basically it started, until Israel engaged in a mass starvation campaign. They were fine with the violence, with the starvation when it was kind of more below the surface. It was an acceptable level of starvation. They were fine with the rapes of Palestinian hostages. Of course, they call them prisoners. They were fine with all of that. It's only when it's stuff that's done to children, which of course is a crime. I mean, it's horrifying, but it had to be, like you were saying, Abu Bakr, like the perfect victims, right? So they were only, now some people are finally speaking out, but only, I would say, because children are being starved. So you can't even pretend that that's about October 7th or Hamas, whereas everything else they were able to pretend was about October 7th and Hamas.
Well, but October the 7th was a retaliatory attack for what Israel has done for October the 7th.
No, I'm just to explain, I'm saying that that's their framing of it, right? Like they were able to pretend.
I understand. But I mean, like, honestly, like anybody bringing up the Hamas thing point is an idiotic person who knows nothing and who's a cheap sellout. That's how it is.
A sellout. In some cases, they're not even sellouts because they don't even pretend to. I mean, sellouts is like the best that they are. The worst is that they're just open racist Zionists who aren't even sellouts.
I mean, you're right, but I'm just saying, like, there are no words.
To be pro-Palestine.
There are no words. A lot of people, and I have to say this out loud at the moment because I'm aware of this, but many of our allies are our enemies. Oh, I think Abby can agree with me on this. Many of our allies are our enemies.
Can you elaborate on that?
Many are profiteering from the genocide. They're pretending to be pro-Palestinian, but they're profiteering from the genocide. Many are trying to dehumanize the Palestinians, but in a different way. And I've received this myself, that a lot of people have contacted me just to act as a polite boy, as they say, because that's how we need to address the West. So we have to kneel to the Western Empire just to address our rights. But that's something Gaza has been doing for many, many years. They've been calling on the international community to help them get any kind of human rights in Gaza for October the 7th. Nothing happened. Then this defensive attack happened on October the 7th. But after that, no one talked about it. And we've become the most vile people on the planet. And everybody took it. And now we're seeing people opening up on genocidal rhetoric, like Congressman in Florida, as in Fine, I think his name. Yeah. He said new Gaza before, no accountability, no charges, nothing. But imagine if a Palestinian person said that. The Israeli ministers, officials are always opening up on genocide rhetoric, saying there's not a single human being in Gaza. There are animals, and all of them are not innocent. They are all involved in the war crimes. They all support Hamas. They haven't shown any kind of support for the Israeli prisoners, whatever. And that's how the narrative is being. And unfortunately, Western media, I'm sure both of you are aware of that, until now, Abby, even if they are pretending and masquerading as pro-Palestinians at the moment. But until now, see the Western media outlets, see the number of Israelis who are being platformed, the number of Palestinians who are being platformed. And this can tell you, do never change. Someone who's been racist who is racist towards the other races and towards Palestinians will never change. Someone who's been complicit will never wash his hands of their complicity. And those people are anti-genocide, but pro-apartheid. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's how they are. And I just want to say this, probably you would disagree with me with this, but Ina, I don't know his second name, her second name, Ina Kisperan, I don't know her name, the second name. She's a famous journalist. She's been against the genocide. She's been featured in the Piers Morgan show and other shows. Ina Kisperan, something like this, I don't know her name, second name. But she's someone who's been promoted by pro-Palestinians, but she's someone, I mean, the way that people, Abby talked about it before, a lot of people think it's all, the problem is only in the Israeli government, and that we just, to solve the problem, we should replace the Israeli government, and Israeli people have right to this land, and they must stay on it, and that it's all about the Israeli government and Netanyahu, not the other people, but it's a fascist, sadistic Nazi society that has been always going for murdering Palestinians, mass murdering them. And most of them right now, according to reports and polls, they want Palestinians to be expelled and they want nothing for us but destruction, hell, and a Holocaust. So that is everything that you need to know. We're dealing with a bunch of fascists, literally, and Nazis, literally.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the, it's a nice idea that governments don't represent the people. But, you know, I had this guy on my show, Haim Brashid Zabner, who said that this is the most, he's from Israel originally. He lives in England. He's active in Jewish Palestine Network, and also one of the founders of Holocaust Survivors and Descendants Against Genocide. And what he says is that this is the most democratic genocide in history because of the high level of support among Israelis. You know, this is not, it's more, there's more consensus around this than there was with Nazi Germany.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And also because of the protests, I mean, the protests that we're seeing in Israel that say, like, they're protesting against the genocide, whatever. I'm sorry, if you show support for Palestine, leave the land. What the hell are you doing in occupied Palestine, saying, like, I'm an Israeli, but against the genocide and against starvation, but you're living in an occupied homeland. You're already living in a place where many Palestinians have been murdered just to be here. So what the hell are you doing? Like, it doesn't make any sense for me. No, it's just, as I said, performative and masquerading as peace activists. But those peace activists have been living in places and neighborhoods where many massacres have occurred of Palestinians over the past years. There's a root of the problem. This root of the problem has to be solved. And then we can talk about the other things. This is apart from the Arab regimes, from the Western communities, the Western governments who are simply slaves for America and Israel. But look how they can't even think about the fact how fragile Israel and the West are. And because you mentioned the ultimatum, we didn't say about it, that Hamas is destroyed. Yeah. I'm someone who has lived under Hamas. This is first. Abby probably has known about Hamas because she's voted on them. I can tell you, not out of support, of course, but I'm telling you because I've lived under them, the resistance in Gaza will never, ever be destroyed, will never, ever be dismantled. If you want to dismantle the resistance, because he's talking about the Hamas as if it is resistance, which is untrue, because Hamas is a political wing, the resistance is a group of fighters who are fighting for their homeland, but he can't take the belief out of people. If you want to destroy a group or a society, you need to destroy their beliefs, their creed, but you can't do that. And for 22 months, nothing has paid off and nothing would pay off. And he did this ultimatum in February. He said the same. Nothing happened. He said it again a few weeks later. Nothing happened and nothing will happen. You cannot simply defeat indigenous people to the land. You cannot. No. It never happened in history.
Yeah. By the way, Haim Bashir Zabner, who I brought up, when you're in London, you should meet him. I'll try to connect you guys, Abubakar. But he spoke at a protest outside of the Israeli ambassador's residence in London. He said that Israel was never going to be able to defeat Hamas or the Houthis or Hezbollah. And he was arrested. And they wouldn't give him his medication. So,
well, I'm someone who's left, as I said, like... I know what Gaza is like, and believe me, nothing will happen. And I believe 100% in the resistance in Gaza and in the armed resistance. And those are the people whom we must support. Everyone should support, because we have a right to self-defense. We have a right to legitimate resistance and to repel an illegal occupation. That's something we shouldn't shy away from, but we should support openly and publicly. Everywhere we go, if you have, of course, if people have an atom of conscience or an atom of moral clarity.
Anything else you want to say? I'm not kicking you off, but I know you wanted to go to bed.
So. I'm very pleased to speak while Abby and you are here. You both are doing. I just wanted to say that literally many people in Gaza know both of you, and always they talk about you and they thank you. And the mothers of Gaza, especially the mothers and everyone in Gaza, depends on you to continue and do everything in your power, because the last glimmer of hope they have is a reflection of your work and for you too. So believe me, everyone who knows you in Gaza, I'm sure, and this is their message, not also it's mine as well, but everyone in Gaza sends you their love and wants you to continue, especially both of you, because you have an effect and you need to continue because of what is happening and because they know how pure-hearted and that you are the essence of moral clarity and of togetherness and humanity. So please keep on, and much love to you.
Wow. Thank you. You too. And to all the people in Gaza. And yeah, I mean, I just like everyone has to do what they can. How can you not be doing everything you can, you know? And that's really kind to hear. But it's also like, yeah, that's what we should be doing. You know, everyone should be doing what we're doing. That's the problem.
Definitely. We shouldn't. Look, we're not in a position to defend where we are. We're in a position to be aggressive, to be attacking, because we are the rightful owners of the land. We're in a position to defend our humanity. We're not in a position to defend ourselves from the attacks, the made-up attacks that Israel is regurgitating everything, that is regurgitating all the time. That's what people need to understand, because every time we're explaining, we're losing. We shouldn't be explaining to these people. We should attack them with what we believe in. And our belief should be unshakable. And I'm sure the belief in your thinking, both of you particularly, and many people around the world, probably a few, are unshakable. And we need to have one unified voice against this brutal evil, which is Israel, the Western communities, countries, and the Arab regimes. That's a war, not against Gaza, but against the humanity.
Well, thank you so much for everything that you do. And please come back, and we'd love to have you on more. And other people who you think would be important for us to hear from.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Katie. Thank you so much, Abby. Keep smiling and give everything. Thank you. Bye. You're both amazing. Stunning. Bye.
Have a great night. Wow. So sweet. Yeah. It's so nice to hear that, of course, what he said, but it is a reminder that, you know, what we're doing just should be the norm, just like covering this, you know, and speaking out against this. And it's an indictment of society and of journalism that we stand out at all.
Exactly. You know, exactly. The fact that anyone knows us at all is an indictment against the corporate media and Western journalism. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. You know, I wanted to just really quickly talk about the journalists who have been murdered. Katie, I mean, especially Anas al-Sharif, 28 years old, you know, I mean, to think of how young that is and how horrific it is that Israel smeared this young man as a Hamas operative. And even if he was, nothing right. justifies extrajudicial murder. That's what courts are for. Okay. So all of this is sick, even if you're running on the premise that someone equals Hamas equals justified murder. That is sick. But let's just look at Anas al-Sharif. What a long con, right? Because this man graduated from Gaza City's Al-Aqsa University with a mass communication degree. He specialized in radio and television in college. Then he volunteered for a media network. And then he won Best Young Journalist in Gaza in 2018 for his amazing, diligent reporting on the ground. This was a man who dedicated his entire adult life to investigative journalism and reporting, even before he got the job with Al Jazeera. So, you know, and it's the same with Ismail Al-Ghul. I mean, he obtained a bachelor's degree in journalism at the Islamic University of Gaza. And then he studied media and journalism. He was 27 years old. I mean, just wrap your mind around that. Hossam Shabbat was 23 years old. I mean, it's just sick. It's sick that you could have press outlets regurgitating IDF press releases about these young, heroic men being Hamas operatives. How dare you? How dare you? Where is the outrage? Where is the outcry? You know, these Western journalists will never even fathom what heroism is, what selflessness is, because journalists in Gaza are the bravest human beings alive. They know that their work is a death sentence because Israel openly hunts them and threatens to kill them, but they do it out of duty to their people, not only out of duty to their people, but out of defiance to the world that ignores their suffering, gaslights them, denies their reality. And they do it regardless. And that's something that I don't think anyone can really wrap their mind around. It's unfathomable. It's incomprehensible. And so if people like Clarissa Ward, who leave that TikTok and just think, yep, I did my part, checked a box, right. We will never understand.
Years into it. You know, it is also the rank hypocrisy of, like, imagine someone from a Muslim country calling BBC journalists mouthpieces for state terror and then accusing them of being bankrolled by terrorists, then beginning to murder these journalists. Like, do you think that the media, Western media, would be okay with that?
I mean, it's the whole framework of the people who work for my enemy are deemed enemy combatants. I mean, the fact that, you know, people like me and Chris Hedges and Lee Camp, we were all considered people who could have their entire body of work removed from the internet because we were unsavory characters working for Russian media. I mean, it's absolutely
it's just so funny because it's like, that's exactly what they'd say. Like, the Russians, communists, yeah. You're literally disappearing people from the internet.
Yeah, disappearing people from the internet. And I hate to even compare that to what's going on in Palestine. Obviously, there's no comparison at all, but it's just the idea that Al Jazeera employs people and those people are journalists and they are our colleagues, but because it's Al Jazeera, I mean, let's not forget what even the CIA and State Department did after 9/11. They paid tens of millions, potentially more than that, to decipher the cryons and lower thirds of Al Jazeera because they were so concerned that it was terrorist messaging. I mean, this is how cartoonish it's become. Look at France 24, BBC, Voice of America. Those are all arguably, you know, all the journalists working for those outlets, not only are they state funded and, you know, they could be called agents of the state according to the same logic, but those states are actually genocide heirs. I mean, these are the states committing genocide, colonialism, imperialism, war. So, right. I mean, just by the same logic, it is just absolutely insane and horrific that anyone can co-sign to this. You know, I mean, like 2 years into this and the silence, the egregious, deafening silence from all of the journalists in the world about the systematic slaughter of Palestinians who work in media. I can't wrap my mind around it, Katie. The only thing I can rationalize is that they don't think Palestinians are human. They are bigots and racists, and they are so comfortable with their status that they don't want to lose their job. You know, times are tough, Katie. So that letter sent out by the BBC with 200 BBC employees, I was very pleasantly surprised. I just thought, finally, almost 2 years into this, we finally have a mass letter by BBC journalists signing about how horrific it is that their network is co-signing all this horrific genocide propaganda. Well, consider my shock when I opened the letter and it was 200 anonymous.
Right.
Anonymouses. I was like, right. What?
Right. Anonymous. Yeah.
Wow, really brave, guys. Really brave. And look at the New York Times. The day after, five reporters were bombed in a journalist tent outside Al-Shifa Hospital. What did the New York Times say? They published an article that said, what is Al Jazeera? What is this network that Israel keeps targeting as a terrorist mouthpiece? Let's find out. Well, the network denies it, but let's really dig in here. I mean, this is complicity. This is manufacturing consent for the systematic slaughter of your colleagues.
Right. Yeah. And Reuters putting in Hamas, you know, killed a journalist, Israel said was Hamas operative. Like, you put that in the headline? Like, shouldn't you be better at being like state stenographers? Like, there's an art to it. You want to be a little subtle. You don't want to be that obvious.
Especially because Reuters and AP are supposed to be like press wires. It's like, okay, we get it, but you're not just supposed to literally reprint the IDF press release, Reuters.
Right.
Like, use some goddamn discernment.
Yeah. There's actually a clip I wanted to show that features, I think, a framing that we never see before. I was actually really shocked that CNN let this clip remain on air. So it's Foreign Press Association President Ian Williams being asked about the killing of Anas al-Sharif and whether he's Hamas. And let's take a listen.
Ian, welcome to the program. As we've noted, we've seen repeated calls for Western journalists to be allowed into Gaza as the war approaches its two-year mark. Just talk about, tell our viewers, why that is so important to have Western journalists there to observe what is going on the ground throughout the war, and what the reaction has been and the justification when you reach out to the Israeli government demanding as much.
Well, one of the points is we should trust Palestinian journalists as well, but there's, you know, profound sort of racism, and the Israeli government has basically said if you're Palestinian, you're not to be trusted. Whereas I think the foreign press, the press in general, are now beginning to learn that whatever the Israeli government says has to be taken with a hundredweight of salt, because there's, you know, what they say bears no relation to reality. And they use keywords like, you know, the Hamas Ministry of Defense. Hamas controls the place. And I mean, the Ministry of Health. Hamas controls the place. Journalists there, frankly, I don't care whether Ash-Sharif was in Hamas or not. We don't kill journalists for being Republicans or Democrats or, in Britain, Labour Party. Hamas is a political organisation as well as a terrorist organisation, perhaps. But it's not permissible to go killing people. And this was the distinct change now, is the IDF actually boasted that this was a targeted killing. And the reason they're doing that is they're not letting foreign journalists in. So Palestinian journalists are the only ones who are there, the only ones who can tell what's happening there. And what they're saying completely contradicts what's coming from Israeli spokesmen in Israel and across the world. It's quite clear they've documented the ongoing massacres, and the Israelis don't like it.
What do you mean by not caring whether Anas al-Sharif was part of Hamas? Because the Israelis have produced what they say is evidence and have longstanding statements where they say he was not only part of Hamas, but he was leading a Hamas cell. In your view, that doesn't make him fair game for Israeli targets?
Well, first of all, I don't believe it. He's been working 24 hours on journalism. He doesn't have time to work in a cell on the side. Second point is, I basically don't believe anything the Israeli government says about this. They've lied and lied and lied. They buried a whole medical team.
I mean, by the way, before I'm going to keep playing this, but this woman, her name is Biana Goladryga, and she has pushed the Hamas rape hoax a lot. You know, people could say that she has blood on her hands.
Well, what long-standing documents? She's like, they produce long-standing documents.
Yeah, yeah. What? Yeah. Can she? I would love to see that lady. This long-standing. What does that even mean?
Long-standing documents. She was like, "Whoa!"
Her Hasbara talking points are like fried in her brain. She can't even like reach for the good Hasbara talking points. So disgusting.
They've lied and lied and lied. They buried a whole medical team after denying it. They went and destroyed the evidence. They bombed hospitals, claiming there are Hamas facilities underneath, which weren't there. And the only way to conclusively disprove them was to let foreign journalists in. And they won't do that. So now they're basically saying, if foreign journalists are allowed in now, I would make sure they compose their wills before they go.
These are two separate.
The IDF has no compunction.
These are two separate issues you raise. I think the majority of journalists around the world, and I would imagine a lot of our viewers, would support allowing Western journalists into Gaza to see.
Wow, that is so big of you. What a principled person that you think that they should allow Western journalists in. That is so brave. Wow, you must have gone to journalism school to understand the power of journalism so well, because what an amazing thing to say.
For themselves and report for themselves what is happening in this war. But when you say you don't believe a word Israel is saying, you know, there's been a lot of accusation thrown at Israel for not producing evidence to confirm some of the claims they've made. If they then produce evidence and you say, I don't believe it, where does that leave things?
Well, also, what evidence are you talking about? Like, it is absolutely the right thing to do to assume Israel lies by default. Like, you should never believe it. Until not only should they produce evidence, but like it needs to be cross-checked, because I don't believe anything.
It's again an inverse of reality. It's like you should. The dubiousness is on Hamas instead of Israel, the notorious, pathologically lying, rogue nuclear-armed state committing genocide. Yeah, great journalism.
Also, poor Israel. They've been accused of not having evidence. Come on,
they've been accused of not having evidence about slaughtering 200 plus journalists and their families. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really in a bind. It's really hard for them.
Well, it leaves things. We work on the balance of proof. Our job is to challenge authority. The authority here is denying access to independent witnesses. Nobody else is allowed to go into Gaza. International organizations aren't allowed into Gaza. Journalists aren't allowed into Gaza. Reuters, AP, CNN, BBC are not allowed into Gaza. Now, what does that give a sort of more than a little hint that things are going on there that the Israeli government doesn't want you to know about or doesn't want you to witness? What other conclusion are you going to give? Now, there's a presumption in favor of Israel in a lot of this, which is totally unjustified after recent experience. I think, they've targeted journalists before, in the West Bank as well, by the way. We're looking at Gaza. But journalists have been assaulted and killed in the West Bank as well for witnessing what the settlers are doing, let alone what the IDF is doing. So I think we're really, you know, it doesn't do Israel any great favors for basically making everything they say totally questionable.
All right, Ian Williams, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for the time.
I bet she like cried after that or threw up.
Wow. That was really heavy. That was really heavy because it's just in the face of nothing, the grasping at straws. I mean, I just wish that he could have just said, what was the evidence? Him posing, posing with Sinwar? Because there's a long list of Israelis that have hung out with Netanyahu and worked for Netanyahu and interviewed Netanyahu and all of the Likudnik cabinet. I mean, it is so horrific. So all of those journalists are completely fair game to be extrajudicially assassinated along with their families. And hey, you know, if you kill 500 people in the apartment building, but hey, you were trying to get that journalist who interviewed Netanyahu one time. I mean, where does this end?
Right. I don't think that Biana would be cool with that. Something tells me. It's so disgusting. Well, I know you don't have a lot of time, and I had a whole other thing I wanted to talk about with you, but Do you have time to talk a little bit about this disgusting development with child visas being revoked?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Oh my God. Okay. So this is an insane story. So, okay, guys, I really have no interest in talking about this person, Laura Loomer. Like, I would love to just ignore her as an extremist, like batshit, insane bigot, someone who actually calls herself a proud Islamophobe. She calls herself a proud Islamophobe. She says that, she's a failed congressional candidate. She's a conspiracy theorist. She's a huge fan of Donald Trump. But sadly, she's not just someone we can condemn and make fun of, because she actually has Donald Trump's ear, as we're going to learn soon. We'll see shortly. So she describes Islam as a cancer on society. She calls herself a proud Islamophobe. She calls Muslims savages. She's been banned from Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also Lyft and Uber. Because she said that someone needs to create a non-Islamic form of Uber or Lyft, because I never want to support another Islamic immigrant driver. Also, she got really upset when she was banned from Twitter. Let's just take a look at this video.
Called me crazy, but what are they doing? I want to know what people are actually going to do. My life is ruined. Does anybody understand how ruined my life is? I'm sick of it. I don't want to listen to people tell me that I'm a conspiracy theorist. They don't know what it's like to be me. My life is ruined, Alex.
No, I understand. I just think you need to go with it. And
I've lost 90% of my income. That's not going to stop the fact that I literally can't make a living anymore, even though I have a degree. I'm sick of it. I'm fighting harder than most.
Wait, yeah, of course. I mean, not just point of information, like you've lost 90% of your income. That's not going to stop the fact that I can't make a living. Yeah, of course.
She's doing just fine.
I know. Yeah. She also needs to get some like her money back. Maybe some way that she can make money is getting money back for that degree, because clearly they did not give her a good education.
Conservatives, I'm fighting harder than anybody and I'm being destroyed, and they mock me and they say I'm some crazy conspiracy.
Well, that's what happens.
Life is unlivable at this point in time. Like, what is the point?
Don't say that, Laura. You're a hero to a lot of people.
No, it's only Alex Jones.
Alex, I am 25 years old. And I don't
what is the point, Lord?
I know.
The rest of my life, I could potentially live 75 more years. You know what I'm saying? And like my life now, I have to worry about getting murdered by leftists and Muslims every single time I go outside.
It's disgusting. Oh, I know. They're so protected. It's so sick.
So sick. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She's under threat. Somehow she's made it. That was years ago.
She's really made it now. Look at her now, right in the Trump White House, having Trump's here.
She's survived so many assassination attempts. I mean, there were literally no
assassins. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So this woman, though, was very upset. It's not enough that she had to deal with being banned from Twitter at one point. She is very upset by something she had to witness. It really is, to be fair. It's extremely upsetting. Brad, let's take a look at her first tweet about what she witnessed.
That her fake tires being slashed. This is even
worse. Exclusive. This is from Laura Loomer. Exclusive. Despite the U.S. saying we are not accepting Palestinian refugees, in quotes, into the United States under the Trump administration, I have obtained video footage of Palestinians who claim to be refugees from Gaza coming into the United States via San Francisco and Houston, Texas, this month. The Palestinians traveled from Gaza to the U.S. with the help of a group called Heal Palestine. How did Palestinians get visas under the Trump administration to get into the United States? Did State Department approve this? How did they get out of Gaza? Is Secretary Rubio aware of this? Who from the State Department is assisting Heal Palestine? Why are any Islamic invaders coming into the U.S. under the Trump administration? Who approved these visas? This is a national security threat. We didn't vote for more Islamic immigration into the United States. Who signed off on these visas? They should be fired. Okay, she sounds like an insane person, obviously, right? Well, actually, stay tuned, because what happens next, you're not going to believe it. After she tweeted that out, and because she tagged the State Department and Marco Rubio, literally the next day, the State Department announced, and we can see the tweet about this, all visitor visas for individuals from Gaza are being stopped while we conduct a full and thorough review of the process and procedures used to issue a small number of temporary medical humanitarian visas in recent days. Okay, next, what happens? She actually brags about basically controlling foreign policy. So she writes, following the release of my reports yesterday exposing flights of Gazans arriving at airports all across the U.S., I know, what the hell is wrong with her? The U.S. State Department just announced that all visitor visas for individuals from Gaza are being stopped. Okay, so this is fantastic news. Thank you, Secretary Rubio, for your prompt response to this invasion of our country by NGOs that have been accused of being pro-Hamas. Hopefully, all Gazans will be added to President Trump's travel ban. There are doctors in other countries. The U.S. is not the world's hospital. Okay, so she wants all people from Gaza to be banned, including children. Gaza has become the capital of child amputations. And it just so happens to be that those weapons that are killing Palestinian children, maiming them, forcing them to undergo amputations without anesthesia, those weapons happen to be made here, but we should not only ban them from coming here. God forbid. And it's not like the government is paying for this. This is an NGO called Heal Palestine that a guy named Steve Sowsby founded, who used to be with the Palestinian Relief for Children. He is the guy covering this. They raise money. In fact, like, the irony is the U.S. should be funding this. Like, right. The U.S. should be using our taxpayer dollars not to blow up kids, but to save kids. But no, for her, the crime is not the genocide. The crime is letting children come to be operated on after having their limbs blown off, after losing their parents, their siblings. And so what's next, though? All right. It gets even better. She says, while I appreciate the State Department and Marco Rubio issuing this statement, I want to press even harder to highlight the crisis of the invasion happening in our country. All right. Now, let's see how Rubio responds to this. Here he is on Face the Nation being asked about this.
State Department just announced that they're halting visitor visas for all Gazans coming here for medical aid. Why would some of these kids, for example, who are coming to hospitals for treatment be a threat?
Well, first of all, it's not just kids. It's a bunch of adults that are accompanying them. Second, we had outreach from multiple congressional offices asking questions about it. And so we're going to reevaluate how those visas are being granted, not just to the children, but how those visas are being granted to the people who are accompanying them. And by the way, to some of the organizations that are facilitating it, there is evidence been presented to us by numerous congressional offices that some of the organizations bragging about and involved in acquiring these visas have strong links to terrorist groups like Hamas. And so we are not going to be in partnership with groups that are friendly with Hamas. So we're going to pause those visas. There was just a small number of them issued to children, but they come with adults accompanying them, obviously. And we are going to pause this program and reevaluate how those visas are being vetted and what relationship, if any, has there been by these organizations to the process of acquiring those visas. We're not going to be in partnership with groups that have links or sympathies towards Hamas.
Okay, first of all, there's absolutely no evidence of that, like absolutely none. Mm. But I'm glad that they're erring on the side of keeping children out of this country for operations that this country is responsible for in large part. Operations on to fix things that this government has enabled through funding this genocide and arming this genocide. Okay, last thing, I have to show this. So this is how inverted and perverse our world is. Democrats have been mostly silent. Jason Crow was on Face the Nation, asked by Margaret Brennan about this. He said nothing. Like, he didn't condemn what Rubio was saying. He basically doubled down on that. Yeah, we can't work with Hamas. Okay, this is the opposition party. Can we just show the tweet by this surprise person, Marjorie Taylor Greene? Okay,
jump scare.
She writes, two recent decisions made by the State Department both involve children. We need to be the America that allows war-torn children to come here for life-saving surgeries and the America that never releases a foreign child sex predator that our great law enforcement officers caught. But in this circumstance, those war-torn children are from Gaza and this foreign child sex predator is from Israel and works directly for Netanyahu. Let me guess, would it be anti-Semitic to drag Netanyahu's cyber executive director back and prosecute this POS to the full extent of the law? And at the same time, let Palestinian kids who had their limbs and bodies blown apart receive surgeries in America? And of course, I'm not saying bring in refugees or use taxpayer dollars, not at all. But when did America's heart grow so cold to refuse innocent children privately funded surgeries and then they return home after they recover? Wouldn't we allow Israeli children if they were the ones needing surgery or war-torn children from any other country? And the most concerning question is when and how did America become so subservient to Israel that we immediately release a child sex predator after arrest with a 100% locked up case with evidence and let him off to fly back home to Israel? What would we do with a Mexican child sex predator, a Chinese child sex predator, any other child country child sex predator? I know God does not discriminate in his love for children. Why would we? And this, of course, is an insane story. So she's basically, I mean, making a very good point, and she's contrasting the way that the United States is now treating children who made the mistake of being born in Gaza, made the mistake of getting themselves, I guess, blown up by the Israeli government with our support. They are being banned and no longer allowed into this country. But if you were a child sex predator, and we can show let's show one of the headlines from about this latest child sex predator who was released. You will be, even though there's evidence against you, you will be released and allowed to go back to Israel.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Heal Palestine is an incredible NGO, has nothing to do with Hamas, even if they did, who cares? Right. You have to coordinate with the government of Gaza in order to get kids out who are being blown up with our tax dollars and weaponry made in the USA. These people are heroes. I mean, these people are saints. These children are, a lot of them are orphans, limbless. The UN says that 10 children a day lose their limbs in Gaza from our weapons and with the support of our government. I can't say I am too shocked, because we knew about the nonprofit killer that was sitting in Congress that the majority of Congress already approved of, which would strip nonprofits of their charitable status if they supported Palestine, not even to do with Hamas. It's just if you support Palestine, you can be stripped of your nonprofit status. That could apply to me, JVP, Heal, PCJF, the list goes on and on and on. The fact that we were allowing Palestinian children to come here, of course, we have the most specialized doctors in the world, obviously high-tech equipment that could really help these children. And so it's just sadistic. Plain and simple. The fact that someone like Laura Loomer, who should be just cast away from society, a complete pariah, never taken seriously and jobless, like she was crying about on InfoWars several years ago. Instead, she has might as well have a top position at the Trump White House. He wanted to give her a position. I think it's actually good that the mask has been completely ripped off. This is an unabashed white nationalist government. Stephen Miller's running the immigration policy. Laura Loomer is somehow running our visa policy. Speaking to Marco Rubio, who looked like he was on a coke bender, complaining about shadowy silhouettes of Venezuelan operatives following him around in a hotel at 4 a.m. This guy's a maniac, lunatic. Thanks, Bernie Sanders, for that vote. It just shows the egregious double standard. Impunity and just hypocritical like nature of our policy with Israel. And this wasn't just some random guy in Las Vegas, just on a bender. Yeah. You know, as we know, a lot of pedophiles and a lot of criminals can evade prosecution in Israel because of the right to return law or whatever. If you're just Jewish, you can just go and live there and expel a Palestinian. But this wasn't just some random guy. This was the top senior cyber warfare official. According to the police report that Netanyahu claims, no, he was never arrested. He was just questioned and then let go. No, this guy was in a sting operation, caught trying to lure a 15-year-old girl into having sex with him, all documented. Once he was arrested, the police report said that he claimed he was meeting with NSA officials here and that he'd already met with several in the bureau. This was a top guy in Netanyahu's cabinet coming here, trying to solicit sex from underage girls. You know, this doesn't bode well for the people obsessed with Epstein and thinking that there's this conspiracy of a pedophilic elite running a sex trafficking operation that's being covered up, does it? Because, you know, as Trump is speaking out of both sides of his mouth, pretending like he has nothing to do with the Epstein files, even though we know that Jeffrey Epstein said out of the horse's mouth that Trump was his best friend and the Trump Hotel and all of the shit, it just seems like he was actually an integral part of the entire Epstein blackmail operation. And we know that Epstein, according to Trump's labor secretary currently, that he belonged to intelligence. Epstein belonged to intelligence, so leave it alone. So it really doesn't bode well, does it, that another sex criminal is getting swept up and basically taken out of the country. Trump administration intervened, took this pedophile out of the country and exported him to Israel. Well, he'd be safe and sound for the rest of his life. And you're never going to hear another peep about it from Pam Bondi as they're releasing Ghislaine Maxwell into a, into another nicer jail and potentially going to release her. I mean, it's just so beyond the pale. It's the most obvious conspiracy in the world. So I just hope that all of the people who hung their hats on Epstein didn't kill himself. They can see with their own eyes, right? That their cult hero is lying to their face. That this is the guy who's actually covering up sex criminals and sex pests. This is your hero, guys. I mean, it's just so, you cannot make this up. You honestly cannot make it up.
Yeah, I know. It really is awful. I mean, and here's the perp. Police say Tom Artyom Alexandrovich brought a condom and thought he was meeting teenager for sexual conduct. Israeli government official charged with soliciting 15-year-old girls. And an Israeli government official charged with soliciting a minor believed he was meeting a 15-year-old girl for sexual contact. Tom Artyom Alexandrovich, a division head at the Israel National Cyber Directorate, was arrested in a police sting operation aimed at online users seeking to sexually prey on children. But the, you know, what you can't make up is the fact that he's now back in Israel. He's back in Israel. And this is not, sadly, an isolated incident. I have to share something else. One second. Okay, so here we go. A previously unreported spreadsheet of 2,152 international legal requests with the state of Israel was hidden within last year's anonymous of justice leaks. Among other things, the leak shows the delayed or failed attempts of the DOJ to extradite various sex abusers from Israel where they had fled to evade justice. And here we go. That's him again. And after pleading guilty in 2002 to abusing three children from ages 8 to 10 and serving time in jail, the Los Angeles-based Rabbi Mordechai Yomtov violated his probation by fleeing to Israel by way of Mexico, where he acquired a fake passport. Another story, the American citizen Jimmy Julius Caro similarly fled the United States after being accused of sexually assaulting a 9-year-old girl in Oregon. Was sentenced to 13 years in jail by an Israeli court in early 2021 regarding a separate case involving dozens of rapes of two girls. According to the leaked overview of active international legal requests, the Israeli Ministry of Justice opened cases regarding the U.S. government extradition requests for Kuro and Yamtov, both characterized under sex with minors. So there you have it, guys. This is our, draining the swamp.
This is draining the swamp. I mean, what happened to all the QAnon energy, all the satanic panic that fueled the first Trump administration? I mean, all the spirit cooking, the Podesta leaks. Where's all that energy now for the actual pedophile ring that is being protected by Trump? It's just so insane. I mean, it's right in front of your faces, guys. It's Trump and his cohorts. They hoodwinked you. So, it's just the same playbook, Katie, that the real criminals are protected. And then the helpless children who deserve, like you said, we should be sponsoring these children to come here. We should be giving reparations. We should be rebuilding Gaza for what we have let happen with our tax dollars. And instead, this is the outcome. This is the outcome of having a horrific bipartisan agenda that co-signs genocide, apartheid, colonialism, and ethnic cleansing. This is our government, Katie. It is horrific and disgusting. I am so ashamed to be American. I am so disgusted to be an American. And I'm so disappointed in the rest of my citizenry for their lack of outrage. Because at this point, you cannot claim that you didn't know. You cannot claim that you didn't see, that you don't know what's going on. Ignorance is no excuse anymore. And so where are you? Where's your voice? Where is your body? We can't just wait until it comes on your doorstep. These are the children that need us now. All of the children who are starving, they're going to be permanently brain damaged because they're so malnourished. Children, if they're not physically impaired, they will be brain damaged for life because of the acute malnutrition already, even if they're fed today. This is not the world that we want to live in. So we have to fight, even if we're going to lose, Katie. We have to fight, even though we know that we're up against so much, because we can't let Trump and these disgusting criminals win and shape the future. We can't. And, you know, I know that we don't have time, but the ecocide in Gaza too, it's something that not enough people are talking about, of course, because we're dealing with a genocide of human beings. But the ecocide will impact everyone on the planet for generations. The destruction of all of that concrete and all of the green space. You know, Gaza used to be considered a wetland, actually. There was a really, it wasn't just a barren desert. It was a rich, biodiverse wetland. That's why Israel, you know, the natural gas, that's why Israel wants the land so bad. And they've destroyed every possible vestige of life. You know, what are they going to live on? We're going to be breathing these carcinogens too. This doesn't just stay contained in that area. The short-sightedness of this genocidal policy is just beyond comprehension. And so I just encourage everyone to wake up and start linking all these struggles together, because it's not just one issue. It's everything. This is a multi-pronged battle and multi-pronged fight. And I'm just kind of trying to piggyback off Abu Bakr's energy that we all have to do more.
Yeah, Abby, this has been so amazing. And I thank you for your generosity, because I know you're slammed today. But you have to come back on. We have to do something with me, you, and Rania. Also, we have to do something in person again with me, you, and Rania. But also, we have to talk more about the ecocide at another point, because it's so undercover.
I'd love to.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Katie.
And of course, your film, which is about ecocide, if you will, right?
The biggest ecocide ever, which is planetary ecocide from the U.S. government, the Pentagon, and U.S. imperialism. And we have to fight it, Katie, because we need a habitable planet. And it cannot coexist with a global military empire. Thank you, Katie. Right. I love you. See you in New York, Abby.
Love you, too. Come on. Yes. Inshallah. Bye. This has been a great show, guys. I'm so honored to speak to those two guests. And also, I have an exciting announcement, which is that we're going to be doing an extra discussion. It's going to be live, probably. It's going to be Patreon only after it's recorded. And it's with Blakely, the great Blakely. We've had Blakely on before. They do great work on TikTok and they're great critics of Zionism. And so Blakely and I are going to do a special stream this week where we're going to be basically bashing Laura Loomer in a tasteful way. But someone's got to do it, because Laura Loomer really likes to make fun of people's appearances. And so we're just going to, you know, we're going to like see how much that makes sense for her to do that. Well, thank you guys for everything. And thank you for tuning in. And that was an amazing show. And I think I think as long as this doesn't get a shut off of YouTube, it'll all be public. But there's a chance that we have to take some stuff down so we don't get in YouTube trouble. So if not, check the Patreon to see if there's anything there at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. But we will definitely have more Patreon this week from me and Blakely. Bye, everyone. See you later. Thank you so much for watching. And thank you so much, Abu Bakr and Abby Martin.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save.